So for the next 50 minutes, we'll talk about minors and children with alcohol offenses. And our speaker is Judge Spisak from the city of Fredericksburg. She's been a municipal judge for over 2 years now, right?
About two and a half years.
She is a longtime educator and attorney, but she was new coming into the municipal court world and decided to come through our 32-hour training program. So we met at that point, and I knew at that time that we had a future instructor on our hands, and luckily we roped her in this year. But she is the presiding judge there in Fredericksburg. She used to serve with the United States Air Force JAG Corps and taught at the Air Force Academy for a number of years. She was the senior prosecutor and general counsel at 3 Air Force bases. She previously served as senior judge for the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals and did a couple of years in mediation. She did her undergraduate and law school work at the University of Oregon, and she is also the author of a mystery novel that is as yet still not published.
Still unpublished.
Right? Okay. Let's give Joyce a warm welcome.
Thank you. Make sure I'm on. Yep. Okay. Thank you all. I'm glad you're here. You can tell that I have a pretty varied background, but as Mark pointed out, I've only been a municipal judge for a couple of years, so I'm sure that most of you out there have a lot more experience in this than I do. But nevertheless, perhaps today we can help each other and learn a little bit, or mostly I think this session is going to be kind of a reminder, a refresher of what the law is all about. Now, I don't know about all of you, but sometimes when I have minors in my courtroom who are 17, 18, 19 years old, they get a little huffy about being charged with possession of alcohol or consumption of alcohol or the like because of something like this. And it's kind of hard to answer. As a result of that kind of question, you all may remember several years ago, most of the states lowered the drinking age, at least for beer, to 18. And then found out we had a whole lot of problems with that, so they shot it back up again. Well, so I guess you might try telling them about the number of cases we have in municipal court every year, and they're pretty staggering. But, of course, if you do that, all they're going to say is, yeah, but if you change the law, you wouldn't have so much work, and these cases would all go away. So that's probably not a good way to handle that question. You could also turn to them and talk to them about the number of young people who are killed, maimed, injured, or who harm other people as a result of drinking and driving or other accidents. But if young people are the way they were when I was a kid, and I think they still are, they all think they're immune from harm anyway. So this probably isn't going to help them much either. So I guess the question is, why do we have these laws? If they're so difficult to explain, why do we have them? Well, if you look at the Juvenile Justice Code, it says in there, not only is this code designed to create a concept of punishment for criminal acts, but it's also there for the treatment, training, and rehabilitation of young people. Similarly, the Alcohol Beverage Code says that it's an exercise of the police power, but for the purpose of the welfare, health, peace, temperance, and safety of the people of the state. So what we're looking at is protecting, training, teaching, and providing for the health of our community, and especially the youth of our community when we have these laws. So let's start. The beginning slide said this is about minors and children involved in alcohol offenses, and there is a difference which in a couple of places in our conversation today are going to become important. So we're just going to very quickly remind ourselves of what the difference between a minor and a child is. A minor is a person who's under 21 years of age. Notice it's not 17, that magic number at which we don't have to have parents in the room anymore when we see the children. But it is anyone under 21. Doesn't say a beginning age, doesn't say anything other than under 21. A child, on the other hand, is someone who is at least 10 years of age and under 17 years of age. But it's also a 17-year-old or older. I'm not sure how you get 17 years or older and under 18, but I guess they mean 17 years, 6 months, or 17 years, 7 months, or something like that. Not exactly 17 years. And under 18, who is alleged or found to have engaged in delinquent conduct or conduct in need of supervision as a result of acts committed before becoming 17. So those are the people who we have to treat as a child. So bear that in mind as we talk a little later, a little longer here. There are lots of alcohol offenses. The vast majority of the offenses are going to be found in the Alcohol Beverage Code in Chapter 106, and they're listed there. And we'll be looking at each of these a little bit, not necessarily all of the elements, but maybe some of the exceptions, some of the dispenses as we go along here this afternoon. There's also one other, and this slide's getting a little old. When I started this, we were in 2010, and so I've created the slide that says that this is a new offense for us, and it is still kind of new, public intoxication by a minor as of September of 2009, but it's almost 2 years now, so I'm not sure we can call it new anymore. But it is another alcohol offense that a minor can commit and end up before you in your courts. It is, of course, not under the alcohol code. It's under the penal code. So let's take a look at some of the specific offenses. First, minor purchasing alcohol. Now, I didn't list all the elements here because it's kind of obvious. A minor goes in, buys a bottle of alcohol, beer, wine, whatever. You've got an offense. However, there is an exception. It is not an offense if the purchase is made under the supervision and the immediate supervision of a police officer engaged in the enforcement of the code. You know, when I first read this, I said, this is silly. Why do we have this? I mean, that's kind of intuitive, isn't it? It's kind of obvious, isn't it? And then I got to thinking about it. Why do you all think we have to specify this? Okay.
For it to be an offense, at least you're doing the sting, then the person buying has to be a minor.
Okay, but the person buying is a minor. But this says it's an exception if he's under the immediate supervision of the police. Why do we have that exception? Okay. The answer over here is that it would be a defense. It's a prosecutorial purpose because it would be a defense at trial for the person who was selling. So if we charge the seller with selling to a minor, it would be a defense if we didn't have this.
Also, the minor who testifies by the fifth is not being convicted of a criminal offense, but it testifies at trial.
Okay, the minor can testify at trial if we have this exception, trial of the guy who sold it to him. Those are good ideas. The other thing I thought of when I was trying to scratch my brain a little bit about this, how is the police officer going to use a minor to go buy alcohol for this sting operation if there isn't an authorization for him to do so? Doesn't this authorize the police officer to use the minor? So it protects not only the minor, but it protects the police officer. The peace officer is not going to be charged with or alleged to have overstepped the bounds or assisted in, corruption of a minor or assisted in the illegal purchase of alcohol. So sometimes there are backdoor reasons why an exception or a defense might be there that otherwise looks at face value like, of course, you know, nobody's going to think it's a crime if a police officer is directing you to do it. But I think there are lots of reasons, and some of these over here are all good reasons why we might have that. Attempt to purchase. In any attempt, there has to be more than just a simple act. There has to be an intent to commit the offense, and there must be an act amounting to more than preparation, an act that fails to actually accomplish the commission of the offense. So, okay, we have a 17-year-old who's a whiz with the computer. And he sits down at his computer, and he takes his driver's license that says that he's 17 years old, and he makes a copy of it, and he starts manipulating it on his computer. And before an hour or two are gone, he has a new driver's license with his picture and all the good stuff on there, but the date of birth has changed. Now, the reason he did this is because he wants to go down to the store and buy alcohol for himself and his friends tonight. Has he committed an attempt to purchase alcohol? How many say yes? By altering, he has created this document. How many think that's enough to create an attempt? Okay, I've got he's falsified a government document, but he hasn't yet committed attempt. Okay, he puts it in his wallet. He's got it on his hip. He goes down to the store, and he's standing there inside the store looking at all the booze, and it is time to buy. He's inside the store. Has he now committed enough, done enough for an attempt? No. I'm getting all no's all the way across the room. Anybody disagree with that? All right. He picks up the bottle of booze, and he walks around the store. He's got it in his hand. He's feeling good, looking around to see what else he might want. Has he committed the offense of attempt? Oh, now we've got possession. That's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, he's in possession, but do we have an attempt to purchase? Probably not yet. He walks up to the counter. The clerk, Mr. Gibson, is sitting right behind there. He's ready to take purchases. The kid puts it down on the counter. Attempt? Takes out his wallet. Gets out his money. Attempt? Gets out that ID and slaps it on the counter for Mr. Gibson. Attempt? How many think it's an attempt at this point? He's got money on the table, and he's got a card on the table saying he is 21. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I kind of tend to agree with you, but notice the difference of opinion in here. Not everybody agrees with us. That's why you judges get the big bucks, because you're the ones who are going to have to decide at which point the actions of this defendant come to the point of tending to but failing to affect the commission of the offense. And it's not always going to be easy. Now, if Mr. Gibson took that money and put it in his cash register, is there anybody here who would believe that we have not had an attempt? Well, now you've got a purchase. Okay. So somewhere between when Mr. Gibson takes that money and puts it in the cash register and that kid makes his duplicate ID card, we've got an attempt, and it's going to be our job as judges to figure out when that is, if it's a bench trial. If it's a jury trial, it's going to be up to them. Okay. Comment over here is that if Mr. Gibson refused to sell it to him, he got suspicious of this ID card. It's a perfect match, but there's something about this kid. Maybe Mr. Gibson knows him from the neighborhood, and he doesn't sell it. And I would clearly have an attempt. He tried, but he failed. And Mr. Gibson then calls the police. The question is, don't most stores have a sign saying, most liquor stores have a sign saying if you're under 21, you cannot enter the liquor store? I think probably. I don't go to liquor stores much myself. I buy my wine at the grocery store. That's about all I drink. So I can't really tell you. Anybody else got a thought on that?
Yes, you have to have that sign posted on your
door. Okay, you have to have that sign posted on your door. Yeah, I would think just on liquor stores because other stores sell other things. Yeah. But they would not be able to sell you the liquor. Okay.
I do think there's an exception on the sign, though,
for the gentleman over here says he thinks there's an exception on the sign that you can enter with a parent or legal guardian. That may be true, and we'll figure that out in just a moment because there's another thing coming up that might answer that for us. Minor in possession. Except as provided by Section B, a minor commits an offense if he possesses alcohol. So when he picked up that alcohol in the store, as the judge over here said, he was in possession. All right, so what's the exception? Any idea? Parent or guardian. That's the biggie. There are others. If he's employed by a licensed provider and it's authorized by the ABC for him to be so employed, then his possessing the beer or the whatever wine that he's taking to the table is not an offense. But I'm not sure what the exceptions there would be. That we'd have to look at the ABC licensing laws and rules for that. But the biggie for us is, the one we're most likely to see, is in the visible presence of his adult parent, guardian, spouse, or other adult to whom the minor has been committed by a court. Notice it says adult spouse, adult parent, adult spouse, adult guardian. So if we have a very young couple that gets married and they're drinking a glass of wine to celebrate getting married, but they're both underage, do they have an excuse or are they both guilty? Ah, if they're in the presence of their parents, he suggests that they would be okay. Okay. Brand new 17-year-olds got married today. They go to a party with their parents. One set of parents, the groom's parents, are here at the table with them. The bride's parents are in another part of the hotel celebrating with some other people. They went over there to say goodbye. Are both kids okay because they're drinking with one set of parents?
No.
I hear a no, and I hear a just his parents. We got a problem because it says with the adult parent in the visible presence of the minor's adult parent. So being with the parents in law isn't going to cut it. And of course, the minor's spouse is not an adult. Okay, same kind of thing with a party. Your kid's going to have a party, and you know that they're going to be doing some drinking, but heck, they're 19, they're 20. So you and your wife go upstairs and say, have fun, guys, you know, I'll see you later. Everything okay? You know the law, so you stay downstairs, and you're supervising this party. Is your child okay? Yes, your child is okay because you are physically present in the visible presence of the child if you don't lose sight of him. You don't let him go into the next room. What about all the other kids? They have an excuse? They have a defense? Not unless every one of their parents is there. And she says they can cite you, the parent, for making alcohol available to minors. Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And maybe some of this contributing to the delinquency and all of those kinds of things are things you would have to be aware of if they were really young. If they were under 17, it would certainly be. Okay, those are things that the parent had better be aware of. Consumption of alcohol. Alcoholic beverage consumed, again, in the visible presence. It's not just possession, it's consumption. We've already talked about all of this. It does still have to be in the visible presence of the parent. Minor driving or boating. I don't have this problem with boating in Fredericksburg. The biggest thing we have in the city limits is Town Creek. And right now, especially with the drought, I doubt that you could float more than a little paper sailboat down that river, that creek. It's pretty little. So I don't have a problem with boating, but some of you may. Some of you have rivers or lakes in your towns, in your city limits? No? Okay, well, we won't worry about that. Rules are the same for boating or for DWI, for driving. If you operate a vehicle in a public place with any detectable amount of alcohol in the system and you are under 21, you can be cited for minor driving under the influence. Now, I have a question for you. How do you determine any alcohol in the system? She keeps saying, in the system. Yes, in the system. What do you look for? Okay, I've got a guy over here flapping his hand in front of his face. I assume that means the odor. Okay, you're going to look for the odor. Anything else? Presence of alcohol with him. Okay, that gives you possession. It says having any detectable amount of alcohol in the system. I ask you about this because in one of these conferences, when I brought this up, one judge folded his arms across the chest, much like you're doing, leaned back in his chair and said, you can't tell if there's a detectable amount unless you have a breathalyzer or a blood test. Do you all agree? How many think you have to have one of those tests to decide? Okay, she's brought out a point. What if it's yesterday's party clothes you have on and you haven't had a drop of drink today? I assume you mean they spilt the beer on themselves last night and the clothes reek? Okay. Okay, that's why she kept saying in the system, in the system. So let's talk about in the system. You as a judge, what do you look for to convince you, whether it's for a PI from the arrest or it's in your courtroom? This thing, I need this centered better, I guess. What do you look for to satisfy you that there's a detectable amount in the system? I heard odor. What else? Okay, she's saying she didn't understand that it said it had to be in the system So that makes her wonder if maybe you do need to do everything that you would have to do with a DUI. What other things would you do? What does your police officer do when he stops someone for DUI? Okay, I'm repeating. Okay. Good. Let me just explain something here. They're recording this, so I've got to repeat all of your questions and statements. And this is a good one that I want to make sure gets on the recording. He said, and correct me if I misstate, but what I understood him to say is you would rely on all of the testimony that you would rely on in any driving while intoxicated case. You'd look at the expertise of the officer. You'd look at all of the circumstances, why he stopped the car in the first place, all of those circumstances surrounding the arrest. And then if the defendant had an explanation, a defense, if you will, of I collect beer cans and that's why I smell, I was at a party last night and these are the same clothes, somebody spilled a beer on me, I'll get that out, then he can bring that up in defense. But for your PC, for your probable cause, or at trial, you're going to be looking at the same things you would look at for an adult. Yes? Okay, what he's saying is he was a police officer for a number of years, and what you're looking at is the same thing you would look at with the radar. The radar is being used to confirm what you've already observed. And the police officer would be performing the field sobriety test, the blood alcohol, whatever, to confirm what he's already observed. So what I'm getting at here and what I'm getting from all of you is that what we need to find out is the totality of the circumstances. The officer is going to testify or he's going to put in a PC affidavit why he stopped the person. The car was sweeping down the road like this. It ran through three stoplights. It was speeding, whatever it was, why he stopped him. The fact that when he walked up to the door, there was this horrendous odor of alcohol coming out. That when the guy got out of the car, he practically fell down. He was so drunk. He couldn't even make it to the back of the car without the officer assisting him. Whatever all of those facts are. But you probably do need that one crucial element, that odor of alcohol, to show that it's coming out of his breath, to show that it's in his system. For the record again, she said that she's been coming here for 20 years, and that's the first time she's seen in the system, so it does help. I hope so. I hope so. Yeah, I think we all do. It's just always a good reminder, and that's why we have these particular classes, which when you first look at it, you say, I know that. You know, why do I need to go to that? But it's just a good reminder, a refresher, if you will. Okay, what about misrepresenting age? Falsely stating you're 21, presenting documents showing that you're 21, that driver's license we talked a little bit ago, as soon as he slapped it down on the counter, even if he wasn't far enough along for the attempted purchase, even if he failed in purchasing, we may still have him for misrepresenting his age. A separate offense. So the officer may have a couple of options here for charging him. He's got the possession because he's walking across the store with it. He's got the attempt. He's got the purchase if he actually succeeds. And he's got presenting false evidence, false representation of age. Public intoxication for a minor. This is another one that sometimes brings up the questions of how do we prove it? And I think we were going to have the same kinds of proof, the same kind of analysis that we just went through with the driving. The same kinds of problems are going to be there, and we're still going to have to look at the same issues. Now, one thing here, which I thought was really interesting, is this defense. It is a defense if the alcohol or other substance was administered for therapeutic purposes by a doctor. Now, I don't know about all of you, but if I'm under a doctor's care and he gives me alcohol to the point of making me drunk, or gives me a drug that's going to make me wacko, and he lets me out on the street, I think I'm going to have a little few words with him if I get stopped about this. So he says we're talking about a minor here, and sometimes if they have a kidney problem, the doctor may tell them to take a beer every night to flush their system out. Beers are very good about that. I've not heard that treatment, but it's very possible. But look, we're talking about public intoxication by a minor. If the doctor is going to give me this order, he darn well better also include in that order, and if he's smart, he's put it in writing, for me to do this drinking at home under the supervision of my adult parent to protect himself. And then it may not be a true defense because he's violating the doctor's order if he goes out and has six beers instead of the one under parent's supervision. So those are kinds of questions that your prosecutor better be presenting or trying to find out when she presents the case if that defense is raised. Yes. He's asking, does the public place have any variance when it comes to alcohol as opposed to any other public place? Anybody got a thought? Yes. Public places anywhere outside your home?
Not necessary.
Why not?
His
comment is that it depends on the circumstances of the place, that there are many businesses and commercial establishments that are open to the public, invite the public in. Even a bar has areas that are open to the public, but there may be parts of that that are not open to the public. So there may be some private places that are outside your home that wouldn't qualify for public place. There is a definition in the statutes, and I'm sorry I don't have the site right off the top of my head, but you'll find it in the statutes. And one of the things that is a public place there is the public areas of a school. That would be the hallways, the offices, any place that the public can go. Now, I've had a couple of judges tell me that they don't agree with that because the schools now are in kind of a lockdown. You have to report to the office before you can go anywhere on that campus, but that's not what the statute says. You might want to take a look at that as well. Kid's friend's house, his front yard, his backyard is not necessarily a public place, is the comment. What about the front yard? Okay, the judge is saying that when you invite people into your home for this party, that you're making it into a public place and the police can go in to arrest everybody there at this pub, at this location. Do you all agree with that?
No?
Smart kids aren't going to open the front door. Well, that may be. I think there are some issues there, and I strongly recommend that you look at the definition of public place in the statute. It's not an answer that we can come up with right here, right now. There are some exceptions. Front yard, maybe, if the public is able to walk across your front lawn, particularly if there's a history of that, maybe. There are some limitations if it's your home. But notice, we're just talking about public intoxication. The family that invites all the kids over and they let them get drunk has other problems to worry about. We've got minor in possession, minor consuming, we've got the adults contributing to the delinquency, all of those other things. They may not even charge public intoxication. Sir, I had a question over here. Okay, he's saying that if he invited a bunch of people over to his house and they were all drinking, that the people he invited could be arrested for public intoxication?
No.
But he could not. I hear a no over here. Why not, sir?
Just because they don't live.
Okay. He says we've got a Fourth Amendment issue because we're talking about a private residence. The fact that you are invited there does not change the nature of the residence from private to public. If you're invited, it's not open to the public. You're not just opening your door and saying, come on in, world. You're allowing in certain people. Okay, we've got a lady back here who wants to say something. Before we go on, we have a difference of opinion. One gentleman over here says that it's a private residence. They can't get you for it because you're in a private residence. This gentleman says there's a way around it because the police can come and say you're making too much noise, party's got to stop, everybody go home. And once everybody starts going home, they can arrest you outside the home for public intoxication. Now the question is, what about the front yard? Ma'am, you had a question or a comment? Question is, once her son comes home, he's been drinking, he's intoxicated, he gets to her front yard, is he home, is he hers, is he protected, or can the police come to the front yard and pick him up? These are the kinds of questions that you all have to be prepared for. These are the kinds of defenses that you need to expect people to raise. We're not going to answer all of these today. It's all very fact-specific. Your prosecutor is going to present one set of facts, the defense is going to come up with another set of facts, and you're going to have to parse it. And one of the ways you're going to have to parse that is to look at the definition in the statute for public place and apply it to the facts that are presented to you in the case. And every case is going to be a little different. Yes, Judge.
You have to be a danger.
Judge Schlosser has a point. We've got a minor here. It's not necessarily illegal for him to be intoxicated if he is not a danger to himself or others, just like any other public intoxicant. Don't forget that. We've got to have that element. If he's home in his front yard, sitting on the front porch, that may be very difficult to prove. Now, that does not mean the minor's going to get off, because we still have minor in consumption, minor in possession, if he's got a bottle sitting there beside him. So your son may not be 100% protected, but If he's not a danger to himself and others, then public intoxication is not going to apply. We always have to remember that element of this. It's very important. Thank you, Judge. Okay, as I said, we're not going to be able to answer all of these today. Those are issues that you're going to have to address at trial with your prosecutor, with your defense. Special rules for children. A child, remember the definition of child, someone under 17 but over 10 years to 17 years, or a 17-year-old who was charged when he was minor. Okay, but this is a 16-year-old now. This is a child. That child may not be issued a citation and be sent home. Now, I don't know about your cops. My cops don't issue adult citations and send them home. If they issue a citation, they bring them to jail. And then they issue a complaint, because the complaint is what charges in the public intoxication.
Take the child to jail?
No, adult. Adult, pop, adult. And why don't they take him to jail if it's a child? Because of the next element. They may be released to a parent or a guardian, but they may not be held in secure custody. They may be held in non-secure custody until released to a proper parent or guardian or other adult with proper authority. Okay, but a child, someone under 17, may not be held in your county jail, and if you got one there, you better order him released right away, as soon as you find out about it. Child offenders. Sometimes it's difficult to get children to do what you want them to do or to get the parents to help you out. There are some options for you, some things that may be of help. You may refer a child or a parent to child welfare services. If you've seen this child more than once on alcohol or curfew violations or a whole series of things and you think there's a problem with the family, you have the authority to refer them to child welfare service, to welfare services. You may require the child to attend a special program that is in the best interests of the child. Notice this isn't talking about alcohol awareness course. This is any other program that you think is in that child's best interest. You have that authority. On conviction. The question was on conviction. Yes, I think on conviction or deferral. You could make it a deferral element. Minor's appearance and plea. The statute says, well, let's find out what the statute says. Must a child, someone, a minor, not a child, a minor, 17 to 21, appear in open court to enter his plea? How many think he must? Must a minor, 17 to 21, appear in open court to enter his plea? Is that required? How many say yes? Raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. How many aren't sure? 17 to 21. Must he appear in open court? Yes? Okay, so we're up to 7. How many have no idea? Nobody's admitting. All the rest of you think he does not have to appear. You're both right and you're both wrong. The statute reads, no minor may plead guilty to an offense under this chapter except in open court before a judge. What about no contest? Must he appear in open court? Look at the language. No minor may plead guilty except in open court before a judge. Is a no contest plea, nolo contendere, a plea of guilty? How many say it is a plea of guilty? You treat it just like a plea of guilty, the judge tells me. You enter your judgment as a guilty plea, but what is the plea? You're waiving your right to a jury trial, she says. Yes, sir? The statute says no minor may plead guilty to an offense. Now, in my view, the legislature has the authority and the ability to write a statute any way they want. They could have written, no minor may enter a plea except in open court. They could have written, no minor may enter a plea of guilty or no contest. They could have written this any way they chose. They wrote, no minor may enter a plea of guilty except in open court. Now, does that mean you cannot require them to come in to enter a plea in open court if they want to plead no contest? No. I think you can still require it. You're the judge. You control your courtroom. If you want minors to all come in and enter their pleas in open court before you as the judge, you can do that. The law requires you, however, to make sure that if they're pleading guilty, they do so before you in open court. Punishments. All of the punishments are going to be found in the ABC code, even for public intoxication. These are the two paragraphs or subsections you need to be aware of. The first and second offenses are Class C misdemeanors. Maximum fine of $500. The DUI is exactly the same, but the punishment is under 041, not 71. Third and subsequent offenses, higher penalties, and jail time. We're not going to see those. If it's filed as a third or subsequent, you don't have authority over it. But just so you know, if they have two prior convictions, they are not entitled to deferred adjudication. So if your county attorney is deferring on those, you may want to talk to him or her and say, maybe you don't want to do that. Additional mandatory punishments. I say additional because these are punishments that the law requires. You can give them other punishments that you deem appropriate. Now, other in the sense of the fine, these would be in addition to the fine. Alcohol awareness course, if it's a deferred, you must order alcohol awareness course. You must all order alcohol-related community service. If it's a conviction, those two apply, and you have to suspend their driver's license for 30 days. Alcohol awareness says the court shall require attendance and that the person provide you with proof of that attendance. I don't know about the rest of you, but I've been having trouble getting people to come in and give me their proof. They go to the course, and then they don't bring me the proof. And then I set them up for a show cause to show cause why I shouldn't order them their license withheld for 6 months, and they suddenly show up with this certificate that they completed 3 months ago, and they just didn't bother to bring to me. I've had the same problem with driver safety course, so I've changed my orders. I am now very specific in there in bold print. I say, you must bring me the proof within 90 days. Not just take the course, but you must bring me the proof that you've completed that course within the 90 days. Actually, I give them 95 days. Give them a few days to bring it in. But I put that right in the order because I want to make sure they understand that. What if there's no course in your area? I have a problem in that we offer it right in Fredericksburg, but it gets canceled because they only have one or two potential students, and so they cancel the course, and they cancel the course, and they cancel the course. There's one in Kerrville that's about 22 miles away. Of course, the kids always tell me they don't have transportation, but, you know, it's only 22 miles away. They've got a parent. I can order the parent to take them to the course. But that one gets canceled, too. So what do you do? You can call this number or have them call this number. They will help them find a course near them. You can have them go online to this website. And this one, I want to point out, between the OE and roster is an underline. You've got to have that underline in there. That's not just a space, it's an underline. Or you can contact the regional office of MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. They often have courses, and they may have something in your area or have some be of some help to you. Or you can just have the defendant do that. Yes?
Is that an online course?
No, this is just where you would get a list. You go onto that website, and they will give you a list of places in your county that offer the course.
Does anybody know?
No. There is no online TDAC-approved course. Next slide. Sorry. Well, you'll see in a moment, I think, that you can extend that 90 days. My orders say there are no extensions, but if they give me a legitimate reason why they didn't get it in 90 days, I will extend it, and you can. But when they come in, as one young man did last week, and say, I only have 5 days to finish this, and the course has been canceled, and I don't know what to do. Well, when did you first call? Yesterday? I don't have a lot of sympathy for that. Yes. They were 20. The question was, he committed the offense when he was 20. By the time he gets to court, he's 21. Does he still have to order the alcohol awareness course? Yes. The question is whether he was a minor at the time of the offense. Okay? That's the key. On the completion of the alcohol awareness course, you may, you are not required to, but you may reduce the fine by half. Have any of you done that? I haven't either. I'm just always curious if anybody has. I haven't met anybody yet who has. Failure to complete the course, you may grant an additional 90 days, as I mentioned. You don't have to, but you may. If it's not completed within the period that you determine, whether it's 90 days or 180 days, then you must order the DPS to suspend or deny the driver's license for 6 months. You must. It's not optional. If a minor has previously been convicted of an alcohol-related offense, is the minor required to complete the alcohol awareness course? How many think he must take it on the second conviction? A couple of you? How many think he doesn't have to take it on the second conviction? A few more? No. It is not required on a second conviction. He did it once, it didn't take. Doing it a second time may not take either. But you have the authority to order him to do so anyway. If it didn't take the first time, maybe he needs to hear it a second time. That's your call. You decide if you think it's going to work or not. You may also order the parent to go to that course with him or do any other act that will be likely to ensure that the child either takes the alcohol awareness course, the minor takes the alcohol awareness course, or does the community service, if the child is younger than 18. So if he's 17 or younger, you may order the parent to go with him to the course or do anything else that's necessary to see that he does his alcohol awareness course and his community service. There's a question. Sir? He says, how is that verified? Because the certificate just indicates that the child took it. You can order the parent to take it, pay the fine, pay the fee, and get a certificate. If you're ordering him to take it, I suppose you could do that. You're going to have to decide how you're going to verify that. But you can order them to. And if when the child has not completed the course, if the child hasn't completed the course, then you go order the parent in and say, why didn't you make him complete the course? Why didn't you go with him? You're in contempt of court. Right? Mandatory community service. Court shall order 8 hours to 12 hours first offense, 20 hours to 40 hours for DWI. And it gets higher as we go along. Community service must be related to alcohol awareness, education, treatment, or something. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but my small town doesn't have anything like that. I have been racking my brain trying to figure out how to resolve this. I even called Alcoholics Anonymous and asked if they would allow me to send these kids to do community service, to clean up after them, to set up the tables, and just sit back there in the back of the room during the presentations, because I thought that might help. They don't want to do that because of the privacy of the people involved, the anonymity, and so they very graciously declined to help me out with that. But I thought it was a good idea, for at least for the 17-year-olds, those who are older than 14, 15. Yes, Judge? Well, the law says you must order it, and you do have other options. Here are some of the things that other judges do around the area. I have not checked on this Operation Intervention. That's Judge Harden put that in the slide. She's the other judge who does this program. And I have not checked on that, but that's one of the things on my list to do this next week when I get back, because I'm still looking for ways to work that too. I have ordered children to do some of these other kinds of things, interview a doctor, write a paper. I find that the papers are usually pretty poorly written, and I'm turning myself into a school teacher correcting their grammar and such, but those are options. Yes. Excellent. Yeah, the judge says that he requires both a paper and a presentation to the health class at the elementary school, that he has a good relationship with the schools, and that works out well. I think that's an excellent idea and something that the rest of us might think about doing. Pardon me?
You can also contact your MAD.
MAD, again, could possibly be of help. Yeah. Mandatory driver's license suspension, 30 days first offense, 60 days second offense, 180 beyond that, but you're not going to see the third offense, hopefully. DUI offenders, you do not have to suspend their license. That will be an administrative suspension, so you don't have to do that. But all other alcohol-related offenses, you do. As far as constituting a prior conviction, any any conviction under the juvenile code, any deferred disposition is considered a conviction. Yeah, there may be no public record. It may be hard to prove, hard to find. You're probably going to have trouble finding. He comments that the juvenile record is not a public record that you're going to be able to find, so you may not know about it. But under the law, right. You can't get them to testify against themselves as to whether or not they've been convicted in juvenile court. So we may never find that, but the law does say that it is a prior conviction. So your prosecutor maybe knows. I don't know. Any questions that we have not addressed or have not covered? You've been a great audience. I heard before I came here that you guys were going to be just really difficult, that the Odessa people were always harder, but I think you've been great. Thank you very much.